Today's daf is Pei Beis, and we're up to the second line on daf Pei Beis, and we just have to finish in one little piece to complete the seventh perek so that we can immediately start the eighth perek. Gufa, on the second line. We're going back to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi called Makom Sha'amar Rav Yehuda a Masai Ubameb Mishnasenu Eno El Lefaresh Divrei Chachamim. Whenever you see Rabbi Yehuda following the Tanakhama and introducing his presentation with the words Bamedvar Mamurim or the word a Masai, you should know that Rabbi Yehuda is not coming to argue against the Tanakhama, but rather to embellish and interpret the Tanakhama. There's no machlokas between them. V'Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Emosai Lefaresh, Bamed Dvarim Amurim Lachlok. Rabbi Yochanan agrees halfway with Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi that the word Me Emosai or Emosai in the Mishnah indicates Rabbi Yehuda is coming to enhance our understanding of the Tanakhama rather than to disagree with the Tanakhama. But if he says Bamed Dvarim Amurim, then he's coming to argue against the Tanakhama. And now the Gemara is going to ask a kasha on Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and we'll soon see that this kasha is difficult even according to Rabbi Yochanan, because we're going to have a Mishnah in Sanhedrin that uses the word mei emasai or emasai, but clearly we can prove that Rabbi Yehuda is arguing against the Tanakhama. So this objection that the Gemara is going to raise is against both Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan, because both of them agree that whenever it says Emosai, there's no machlokas. Now, to give a little background into this Mishnah in Sanhedrin, which you're about to learn, the Mishnah of Emosai, there are two categories of what's called a gazlan. One is a gazlan who's posel yedus midoraisa, and the other is a gazlan who's only posel yedus midorabanan. The Rabbanan instituted a disqualification of Eidus of someone who technically has not violated Gzela in the way that the Torah would disqualify him for Eidus. And the Gemara asks, V'emosai lefareshu? Can you really maintain, both you, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and Rabbi Yochanan, that emosai is an interpretation? Vatnan, what are you going to do with the Mishnah of Elohim Apsulim? The Mishnah embarks upon an enumeration of all those who are posel midrabbanan. The first on the list is Masachek Bikuvya. This is a gambler. And now we touch on the issue of which is called Asmachta. Obviously, the gambler thinks he's great at gambling. He's going to definitely win. Puts the money or the chips on the table. And lo and behold, to his dismay, he lost. And he has now to pay up. Or alternatively, let's say he's on the other side of the table and now he wins and he takes money away from the other guy, the other gambler, who thought and anticipated that he would win. When these individuals put the money on the table, they both anticipated that they would win and not lose. It doesn't pay to gamble if you're going to lose. So therefore, their agreement to pay the money is only an asmachta. It's not a full-fledged gemiras das. And the Rabbanan said that even though the loser actually transferred the money by hand to the winner, so it wasn't that somebody put his hand into someone else's pocket, vayigzol asachanis miyad amitzri, and therefore on a deraisa level, this is not a gazlan, but nevertheless the Rabbanan considered it gzela because asmachta lo kanya, because he in effect is taking that which is not rightfully his. The second case is malva beribis. The Torah prohibits us from taking usury, interest, on a loan. If you take it, then we passel you for Eidus. Again, you're not technically a gazlan. You know, the lover paid you, and he added the extra interest. But nevertheless, any avera of the Torah, when you violate the Torah because of chemdas mammon, for the love of money, the Rabbanan say you passel Eidus. Mafriche yonim, they raised pigeons in a professional way that the pigeons could race. They were racing pigeons. And once again, we're back to a gambling situation. Each person thinks he trained his Yonah to be the superior Dov, you know, he's going to win the race, and he unfortunately lost the race. So once again, there's a whole issue that we mentioned earlier of Asmachta. Then we have Sochrei Shvius. The Torah says, Li'achla, V'lo'l'schor, that the pears that grow during Shvius are given for Kedusha Shvius, for the mitzvah Achila, and not for business purposes. He took the fruits of the seventh year of Shemitah, and he made a commercial business out of it. And once again, for the love of money, he violated the Torah law. The Rabbanan say you're a Gazlan. We're not going to trust you. Now, what happens in a case of a person who has a very good job, he works from 9 to 5, and he comes home at night, and on Sunday nights, Tuesday nights, and Thursday nights, he goes out to the casino, and he gambles. He's not a full-time professional gambler. Is he possibly Yedus? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Emasai, when do we say that these people, like a Masachi Bekubia or Mafriche Yona, are possibly Yedus? That's only Bisman Shein Lam Umnus Elohi. They are exclusively dedicated as a parnasa for their income from gambling. They are professional 24/7 gamblers. They have no interest in taking a job. They are not oskim b'yishuvo shel olam. They do nothing to contribute to society, and we don't trust them. And Rashi has a whole long discussion as to why the Rabbanan say we can't trust them. Einom chasim al chavereim, if they're not part of the kivshua to conquer the world, to make the world a better, they're not part of society, and they don't know what goes on in society. They cannot testify. Aval says Rabbi Yehuda, Yeshlo Umnus, Shalohi, in addition to making some bucks, some extra bucks at night as a gambler, they also have their main job with a guaranteed, Tlush Maskaret, as we call it here. You know, they pay taxes, they get kranot, you know, they get benefits. But at night, you know, let's gamble a little bit. Is Harezek Kosher? Because they are oskim b'yishuvah shel olam. And all this means that since they receive the money from the hands of the loser in this case, then we're going to hold that asmachta kanya, that even though the person who paid that money and lost his deck, he anticipated that he would win. He was very dismayed and surprised and shocked that he lost. But nevertheless, he made a decision. That's the nature of gambling. And therefore, with that kind of miktas, that kind of partial gemir stas, the kinyan is valid. But if he's not osek b'yishuvah shel olam, that's a person that we cannot trust in a Jewish court of law. He's possibly edus min rabbanan. V'tani ala b'braisa, chachamim omrim, bein she'ein lo umnus elohi, bein she'yesh lo umnus shalohi, whether it's a person who has no other income, that's all he does exclusively is gamble, or he has another profession. Now raise that apostle, because asmachta lo kanya, and therefore he's a gazlan, and he's possibly edus. You see clearly, from this braisa, the Chachamim never accepted Rabbi Yehuda's restriction of the psul of Masachi Bekubia, that it should only apply to someone who's exclusively dedicated to gambling. The Rabbanan went ahead, and they said, Asmachta lo kanya, and in every case, even if he gambles only once in his lifetime, and deliberately takes someone else's money, he has violated gzela to some extent, that he's possibly edus min rabbanan. So how can you, Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Yochanan, say that Me'emasai means that Rabbi Yehuda is coming to interpret? And the Gemara answers, Ahi, de Rabbi Yehuda, Omar, Rabbi Tarfanhi. That opinion in the Braisa, that even if he has another job, 9 to 5, with a steady income, and he's Osik v'Yishuvah Shalol, nevertheless he's disqualified, that's the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon that's quoted by Rabbi Yehuda in another Braisa. And the Braisa says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Mishum Rabbi Tarfon, Li Olam Ein Echad Mehem Nazir Lefishein Nazirus Ela Lafla. What happens is that there are two people and they are walking down the street and they see a third party. And each one of these two people takes the opposite neder. One of them says that if that guy is a Nazir, then I'll be a Nazir. The other one says, if that guy's not a Nazir, I'll be a Nazir. And Rabbi Tarfon says, Ein Echadem Nazir. It doesn't matter who this, and what is the nature of this third party. In both cases, the Naziris is not Chal. Why? Lufisha Ein Naziris El Lafla. Hafla means that you have to have an absolute certain definite decision that you want to be a Nazir. So when you declare Harani Nazir, it means you had a flaw, you had a definite decision to be a Nazir. In this case, neither one of them knew what was the status of, we'll call him Levi, whether he's a Nazir or not. Therefore, none of them really knew whether or not their Kabbalah was, in effect, a Kabbalah's Nazirus. So the game is over. Now, what does this Rabbi Tarfon have to do with our discussion about Mesachi Bekubya? Says the Gemara Alma, we see the cave of the Mesafkale I Nazir I Lo Nazir Hu Lo Meshavde Nafshe. Every Kabbalah's Nazirus is a Shibud. It's accepting upon yourself a major commitment with all the strict laws that apply to a Nazir. And if you don't have a definite commitment, as in this case, Rabbi Tarfon says, then without a definite commitment, that's not called Gemiras Das. That's not called a decision that's binding and therefore generates a valid Nazirus. Hachanami here too, in the case of Mesachi Bekubya, let's apply Rabbi Tarfon's logic. Kaven de lo yada yikani lo kani. The word kani here means to win. He didn't know whether he would win or lose. Lo gabar umakne. He really never had a complete, total Gemiras Das to be makne his money to his friend. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says that according to Rabbi Tarfon, a Mesachik Bekubya, even if he's Osek B'Yishuv Hashalom, he has a job from 9 to 5, he is disqualified for Eidus. Because Rabbi Tarfon holds, Asmachta Lo Kanya, because a person is not Meshavin himself and doesn't have Das for a Kinyan, if he's iffy about it, if he doesn't know, unless he's certain. But the Tanakhama of our Mishnah is of the opinion, our Mishnah meaning in Sanhedrin, is of the opinion, says Rabbi Yehuda, that Asmachta Kanya, and the only reason that we passel a Mesachik Bekubya for Eidus, is because he's not Osek B'Yishuvah Shel Olam. He has no other job, no other contribution to make to society. Such a person is not to be trusted. Hadron Olecha Perek Chalon. And now we begin Be'ezrat Hashem, the 8th Perek of Masechta Eruv. And this Perek is dedicated to the laws of Eruv Tchumen, with some discussion also about Erev Chatzeros. And as we've said on many occasions, a person is not allowed to go outside of the city limits more than 2,000 Amma unless he sets up an Erev Tchumen. Erev Tchumen means he sets up Mazon Shtei Sudos in a location that's within the parameters of the Alpayim Amma. If it's outside the Alpayim Amma, that's not a valid Erev because he has no access to the Mazon Shtei Sudos, Bein HaShmoshos, with the onset of Shabbos. But let's say one Amma before the 2,000 Amma, closer to the city, he sets up his Mokom Shvisa by setting up an Erev of Shtei Sudos. Now he gets 2,000 Amma radius in every direction from that spot where he was Konashvis. Kesa Mishtatvim Bitchumen. Meinechas Achavis V'Omer Reza L'chol Bnei Ha'ir. What if a person wants to be, so to speak, a good Samaritan, and he wants to offer the possibility that his Chavis, his Mazon Shtei Sudos, should be meaningful on behalf of anyone in the city who might have occasion to need to go 2,000 Amma beyond the city limits, and he wants to do it on their behalf. And the Mishnah says that it's very conditional, it's very iffy. It says, HaReza l'chol bnei ha'ir, l'chol mishiyel l'beis ovel, l'beis ha'mishteh, somebody may need to go and be menachem in ovel, and he needs the extra 2,000 Amma to get there, or Beis HaMishti wants to be Sameach to Chasen Kala. So what is the law in this case? Can I offer a mazon shtei sudas erev tchumen on your behalf? It depends. The Mishnah says, kol shekivil ol mibo jom mutter, mishetechshach os, she'en ma'arvin mishetechshach. The person on whose behalf I set up this Erev Tchumen has to be Makabel the Eruv Mibodjom. He has to want the Eruv to be Chal. Because again, keep in mind, every Erev Tchumen works for you and against you. Because it's going to limit your 2,000 Amma to that direction in which the Eruv was placed. It's now going to exclude you from 2,000 Amma on the other side of the city limits. So you have to make a decision, knowing full well that so-and-so, we'll call him Reuven, set up an Erev Tchumen on your behalf, and you have to be makabel, you have to accept and offer your approval, yes, I want to accept that Erev. Is the Erev going to be valid? It depends. If the Kabbalah was Mibod Yom before sunset, then the Erev is valid. If, on the other hand, it was Mishetechshach, after nightfall, meaning after Tzeis HaKochavim, that's too late. You cannot set up an Eruv, a valid Eruv on Shabbos. Here we have a machlokas rishonim exactly how to interpret the word Misha Techshach. Does Misha Techshach mean after sunset, during the 20-minute period between sunset and Tzeis HaKochavim? Or Misha Techshach means when it's pure dark and black outside. It means after the sun has already dipped below the horizon and it's Tzeis HaKochavim. And really, that machlokas revolves around the status of Ben Hashmashos vis-a-vis Erevin. In Erevin, because it's only a Drabanan, we paskin that the Yisur Tchumen is only Drabanan, and therefore the need for an Erev is only Drabanan. Therefore, we can assume that Ben Hashmashos is a Sufik Yom, Sufik Laila, we could be Mekil, and hence, Mishetechshach would only mean after Tzeis HaKochavim. If, on the other hand, you say that Ben Hashmashos is already nighttime, although it's still daytime, but it's also nighttime, then Misha Techshach means once the sun sets, even though there's plenty of light on the horizon, it's already too late to validate the Erev Tchum. Amar Rav Yosef, Ema Arvin Eladvar Mitzvah. Rav Yosef insists that we will only allow you to set up an Erev if you're doing it for a mitzvah. And the Gemara thinks that Rav Yosef has not added anything to the Mishnah that we didn't know before him. Maika Mashmalan. After all, Tanina, the Mishnah says, L'chol mishayelch lebeis ha'avel, o lebeis ha'mishteh. Indicating clearly that the Erev has to be done for the purpose of a mitzvah. Whether it's a mitzvah beis ha'avel, the mitzvah beis ha'mishteh. Ma'od esema, says the Gemara, if not for Rav Yosef, I would have said the Mishnah is orchei de milsa ketani. The Mishnah is only mentioning examples that are commonplace. It's very common for a person to want to go chutz l'tchum, to visit and console the bereaved, or to participate in Sheva Brachas, or some Simcha of Chasam V'Kala. But, Enochinami, for Dvar Rishus, you'd be allowed to set up an Eruv, that's not a problem. The Mishnah is just giving the more common examples, Kamash Malan, that's what Rabbi Yossi wants to say, no. The din is Ein Ma'arvin El Lidvar Mitzvah. Here again, Rabosa, we have a gigantic machlokas rishonim. What happens if a person went ahead against the law and he set up an Erev Tchumen for a Dvar Rishus? Do we recognize it or do we not? And according to those who say that the Erev is valid, then what does the Gemara mean? What does Rav Yosef mean when he says Ein Ma'arvin El Dvar Mitzvah? And they answer that every Erev requires a bracha, but you will not recite a bracha in a case of a Dvar Rishus. Why? Because there's no mitzvah. So we don't say Asher Kitchanu Mitzvosu V'Tzivanu. Enoch Inami B'dievet post facto, the Erev will be valid, even for a Dvar Rishus. But Ein Ma'arvin L'Dvar Rishus, because if he does so, he may make a bracha levatola. The bracha on Erev is only valid and only meaningful in a case where he sets up the Erev L'Dvar Mitzvah. We go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Kol Shekibel Olav Mibodyon. You're only allowed to rely on the Erev and permitted to go 2,000 Amma beyond the Erev if you were Makabel the Erev Mibodyon. Somebody set up the Erev on your behalf. And the question is the following. We have a principle called Yesh Breira, according to one school of thought, which means that if I didn't make a decision now, I can make a decision later that will determine retroactively my original situation. Shramit mina ein breira. Shall we derive from our Mishnah the conclusion that ein breira? What about the man that overholds yesh breira? The yesh breira is tigloi milsal mafreya demibo jom havi nichale. If now when he finds out about the eruv and it's already after techshach and he approves of the eruv, he's very excited. It facilitates his ability to make it to the beis hamishneh. Then lemafreya, it should set it up as if on Erev Shabbos, when the Erev was set, at that point already, he wanted the Erev. Amar Rav Ashi, no. We have to reinterpret the Mishnah. When it says in the Mishnah, Kibel Olav Mibojom, what it means is Hodi'uhu. Not that he actually gave his approval, but they notified him. He was aware of the Erev before the onset of Shabbos. And Veloho Diu, that's what the Mishnah is telling Katani. It all depends upon whether he knew about it or not. In the case where he didn't know about it, you can't apply the principle of Breira. Breira means Lamafreya, I could determine my interest and my will and my approval. But if I didn't even know about it, that's not Breira. The Mishnah is saying, did he know about the Eruv before the onset of Shabbos? If he knew about it, then we can apply the principle of Yesh Breira. If after Chashecha he decides, hey, that's a good idea, he finds out about a Beis HaMishnah on this side and to the west, and he approves, then the Erev would be valid. Amar Rav Asi, what happens in the case of a young infant? Can the mother set up an Erev on behalf of the young infant? Amar Rav Asi, Katan Ben Sheish, up until the age of 6, Yotze be Erev Imo. That means that his mother, who sets up an Erev Tchumen, doesn't have to set up a separate Erev Tchumen on behalf of a son, which is called Lezakos, but immediately when she sets up the Erev on her own behalf, her son is included together with her. It's like Kigufo. It's almost like he's an extension of his mother, because he's what's called Karach Achar Imo. Meisvei, we have a braisa that seems to contradict Rav Asi. Katan shetzarach li'imo yotze be'erev imo, v'she'ein tzarach li'imo ein yotze be'erev imo. If the katan is tzarach li'imo, then, and only then, could he be included in his mother's eruv, because he's tzarach li'imo. But your Rav Asi, you're talking about a six-year-old. Is a six-year-old tzarach li'imo? Okay, maybe you'll say that a six-year-old is tzarach li'imo. So the Gemara says, Utranami, I'm going to quote to you a Mishnah in Sukkah to prove to you that Tzarech Le'imo is much younger than 6 years old. Gabi Sukkah ki Aigavna, we have a discussion with regard to Sukkah. Katan, She'eno Tzarech Le'imo Chayef Sukkah. The Rabbanan required a Katan who's Eino Tzarech Le'imo to sit in the Sukkah. We have to train him and educate him. That's the mitzvah of Chinuch for Sukkah. The Mishnah doesn't stipulate at what age, at what point in time do we say the child no longer needs his mother. And now the Gemara is going to try to prove that the point in which Einu Tzarech Le'imo, when there's a mitzvah of chinuch to bring the child into the sukkah, is at a much earlier age than 6, as Rav Asi insists. And when is it Eino Tzarech Le'imo? Amri Debei Rav Yani, according to one opinion, it means Kol Shen Nifna V'Ein Imo Mekach Nato. He can defecate and he doesn't need his mother to clean him up. Rav Shimon Lakish Amar Kol Shen Nir Mishnas V'Einu Korei Imo. You know, when he wakes up from his sleep, he doesn't yell Imo. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. Ela Ema, the Gemara says, Ima Sal Kedaita G'dol Nami Koru. Even if a child is much older, he will cry out for his mother. He will say, Mom, where are you? Ela ema eina kora ima ima. If he says it twice, it means he's absolutely desperate. Then he really needs his mother. He's at the age where he's tzarech le'ima. And the Gemara asks, V'kama, what age does Rav Yanai and Rav Reish Lakish have in mind? Kibar arba, kibar chamesh, somewhere between 4 and 5. If he's very precocious, very mature, already at the age of 4, he's not going to scream for his mother or ask his mother to clean his feces. In any event, we see clearly that the level or the age point of Eino Tzarch L'Imo is before the age of six, and yet Rav Asi says that if a katan is he's 6 years old, you know, we've had the happy birthday, he blew out seven candles, he's still included in his mother's Eruv. Why? Because he's Tzarch L'Imo. No. That can't be. Tzarch L'Imo is a much younger age. Already a five-year-old is Eino Tzarch L'Imo. And therefore, his mother would have to set up a separate Erev Tchumen on behalf of her son. The son who's Eino Tzarch L'Imo is not included in his mother's Erev. And here we turn to Daf, Pei Beis Amid Beis. Om Rabbi Yeshua Bered Rav Idi. Rabbi Yeshua wants to reinterpret Rav Asi. Kika Om Rav Asi. Rav Asi was describing a whole different issue. And that is Kigon She'erev Olav Aviv. There were two Erevin that was specifically set up on behalf of this child. Not Kigufa, but a special Erev, and in this case, two Erevin. How does a young child end up with two Erevin? Erev Olav Aviv Litzafon. His father set up an Erev towards the north. The Imo Lidarim Shi towards the south. And now the question is, which Erev is valid on behalf of the child? The child is 6 years old. He needs his own Erev. He's Eino Tzarch L'Imo. So the Chiddush is, says Rav Asi, the Afilu Bar Sheish Nami B'Tzavta the Imo Nichole. Even if he's already 6 years old, and which parent does he prefer? Could be that as the boy matures, he gets closer to his father, so to speak, and he wants his father's companionship. But when he's a youngster, he's an infant, and he's only 6 years old, then he would prefer the tzavta. Tzavta means the companionship of his mother. A six-year-old child is very close to his mom. And therefore, if he has a choice whether to join his mom and go south or join his father and go north, he would prefer to go south. And therefore, we are going to validate the Erev that his mother made rather than his father. Meisve. The Gemara now asks a kasha on both Rav Asi and Rav Yeshua from a brisa. The brisa says, "Katan shitzarch li'imo yotze bi eruv imo v'kama ad ben sheish." So the brisa says that the katan is included in his mother's eruv. There's no need for a separate eruv for the katan. That means kigufo. And at what age? Because he's Tzarch L'Imo, v'kama ad ben sheish. So first of all, Tiufta the Rav Yeshua bar Rav Idi Tiufta. For sure, this Braisa is a complete upslug to Rav Yeshua, because the Braisa clearly indicates that he's beyond the age of five, and yet he's still included in his mother's Eruv, whereas Rav Yeshua interpreted Rav Asi as saying that once he reaches the age of either four or five, depending upon the character of the child, he's no longer Tzarch L'Imo, and he will require his own Eruv. So this Braisa certainly is a head-on collision to Rabbi Yeshua ben Bar Rav Idi. But Lema Tevi Tuv to the Rav Asi, is this a contradiction to Rav Asi? And it all depends how you interpret one single word in the Braisa, and that's the word Ad. It says Ad ben Sheish. If ad means ad v'lo ad b'chlal, meaning he's in his fifth year, but he hasn't reached his sixth year, then that's a tiufta against Rav Asi. But omel Rav Asi, ad v'ad b'chlal. When the Braisa says ad ben sheish, it means ad and ben sheish. Now the Gemara asks, lema tevi tiufta de Rav Yanai v'Reish Lakish. Both Rav Yanai and Reish Lakish said that once he reaches the age of four or five, he's already considered Eino Tzarech Le'imo. Gemara says Lo Kasha. We can reconcile their opinion with this Braisa. Why? Because when Rav Yanai and Rav Reish Lakish were talking about the Shir of Ben Arba or Ben Chamesh, the Isa Lavui B'Mosa, the father of this child is local. He's in the city. And then, once he's a four-year-old or a five-year-old, then he's not so much dependent upon his mother because his father is local. and therefore we can consider him as someone who's eino tzarich li'imo, he has his father to fall back on, to stand on the shoulders of his father. But ha the braisa is the lo isa lavua b'masa, the father is nowhere to be found in town, and therefore he's totally dependent upon his mother. And that's when the braisa says, ad ben sheish. Tanur Rabbanu, we learned in a braisa, ma'arev adam ayide bino bito uktanim. A person could set up an eruv for his young children. We have a gigantic machlokus, what that means, young children, ktanim. Does it mean that it's less than bar mitzvah? Does ktanim mean that he is samach al shulchan avo? He may be past bar mitzvah, but he's totally dependent financially upon his father. And then the braisa continues, al yidei avdo v'shivchaso aknanim, which means that he can set up an eruv on behalf of an eved or shivcha knani, because here we apply the principle of kigufo dami, that these are an extension of his yad, and they don't have an independent status, and therefore they're included in the eruv of the adon, of the master, just like the katan is included in the eruv of his father, so too these are included in the eruv of their adon. Now the braisa continues and says, "Aval eino ma'ariv." Lo al yidei avdo v'shivchaso ivrim, v'lo al yidei bito, b'no bito agdolim, v'lo al yidei ishto elamidatam. If, on the other hand, the eved or the shivcha, the eved is an eved ivri, and the shivcha is an om ivriya, they have a full self-fledged status of a Jew, or Jewess, and therefore, you are not going to set up an eruv that includes them, they are not an extension of you, they are independent. Or, for that matter, b'no bito gedolim, which, as we said before, either means they're financially gedolim, even if they're less than bar mitzvah, or it means they're bar mitzvah, and now they have a separate status. They're not included in the gufo of the father, and therefore the eruv is not valid for them unless there was a specific eruv made on their behalf. And ishto, she's an independent, mature person, a halachic legal entity and personality on her own. It's got to be midaita. She has to be the one to agree to the eruv. And if she doesn't want the eruv, or for that matter, the eved or the shivcha Yisraelim don't want the eved, and so too in his ben or bas hagadol hagdolim, is then the eruv is not valid. The Gemara brings another braisa, which says essentially the same thing as this braisa, but just in a different sequence. Tanya, either we have another braisa, lo ya'ariv adam al yidei b'no. Here he starts in the ratio with those cases which are excluded, which means you cannot include them in your eruv because they're separate independent agents and they have the right to make their own decision. Is therefore lo ya'ariv adam al yidei b'no bito agdolim, v'ayidei avdo v'shivchaso ha'ivrim, v'ayidei ishto elamidatan, unless they specifically express their desire that they want you to set up the eruv on their behalf. Avol ma'orev hu ayidei avdo v'shivcha knanim, they are considered an extension of him, ayidei b'no ubito aktanim, bein l'datom, bein shalo l'datom. In other words, even though they object to the Eruv, you can still include them in your Eruv. And why is that so? Mipnesha yodon ki yodo. Their guf is completely kanui. You know, you own their guf. And therefore, you could be koveh. You could determine for them where their mokum shvisa is going to be. V'kulam she'eruvu v'irev aleim rabban. Yotzim b'shel rabban. And in all the cases that we mentioned before, where the Eved or the Shivcha is a Knani, and we have this principle called Yodo Ki Yodon, is Irev Aleim Rabban, Yotzim B'Shel Rabban. And that's fine. Now, Rashi adds another point. I just want to make sure that we have it, that Ervu ve'irev alein rabban yotzim b'shel rabban, which means the following, that if, let's say, two Erevin were set up on behalf of this Eved Knani, one by his Adon, and the Eved himself set up his own personal Erev in a different direction, then the Erev that was set up by Rabban is valid, not their own Erev. Chutz min ha'isha, mipnei she'yichola limchos. Let's say that the husband set up an Erev to the east on behalf of his wife. She set up an Erev to the west. Her Erev is valid, not his. Mipnei she'yichola limchos, because she can object, she can protest. And in effect, by setting up her own Erev, she has expressed her indignation or her negation of the Erev that was set up on her behalf by her husband. Now the Gemara says, Isha Maishna. Why does the Braisa single out Isha? Chutz min ha'isha, b'bnei she yechola limchos. I mean, after all, that should be true for b'no bito agdolim. It should be true for an Eved Ivri or an Obed Vriya. They can all fit into this description of mipnei sheyachol limchos. So why is it dafka with regard to an isha, the brisa goes out of its way to formulate this law that if the eruv was made by a husband in one direction and she, the wife, made an eruv in another direction, her eruv is valid and not his? Amar Rabba, Isha v'chol d'damila. We misinterpreted the word Isha. Isha is not an individual category, but rather a general category. It refers to all those who are similar, those who have the right to object, like an Eved Ivri or a Bno HaGadol. They all have the right to set up a Mechor, not just Isha. And therefore, if there's some sort of conflict between two Erevin, their own personal Erev will be the valid Erev. Omar Mar, it says in the Braisa, I'll read the whole part that's relevant to us, it says, V'chula nishe irvu v'erev lacherim, av'erev aleim, v'erev aleim rabban, yotzim v'shal rabban, chutz min ha'ishim v'nei she'yichol limchos. And the Gemara now is being medayik. What happens, just as an introduction to the sugya, in a case where the husband sets up an Erev on behalf of his wife, she says nothing. She finds out about it and she's silent. On the one hand, she didn't make a mecha, she could have objected and she didn't do so. Maybe her silence is indicative of a tacit approval. On the other hand, maybe that's not sufficient. It's not enough to set up an Erev with tacit approval. We need a Kabbalah. We need that the person on behalf of whom we set up the Erev makes a declaration that this, I validate, I want this Erev. Amar Mar Chutz Min Ha'Isha Min Eishi Yechola Limchos Taima Demachi Hastama Nafka B'Debaila. The reason why the Erev of her husband is invalid is because Macha, she got up and made a protest. That implies that if she didn't make any protest, then we can assume, without any knowledge to the contrary, the Erev is valid. Stoma is nafka, she can go out 2,000 amah, based on the Erev that was set up on her behalf by the husband. So the Gemara asks, wait a minute. If you're telling me that she doesn't need a Kabbalah in a positive sense and an explicit statement that I want this Eruv, as long as she doesn't make a Mecha and she doesn't protest, then what are you going to do with the Reisha, Haktani Reisha, that if a man sets up an Eruv on behalf of his children or Gdolim, on behalf of an Eved or Shivcha, Ivrit, or on behalf of his wife, Elami Daita. Midaitam? My love, the Amri in. Midaitom seems to indicate that it's not enough that she didn't make an Erev in Hastoma, Nafka, Bidabaila, but rather she has to explicitly approve of the Erev. She has to declare her approval of the Erev. It says El Midaiton. And again, this is true not just for the wife, but that entire category. Mara says, lo. The Reish of this Brisa does not have in mind that the Baal has to say yes. Or in the case of a Baal for his wife, that the wife would have to say yes. Umay elami daitam. That seems to indicate that she has to explicitly indicate her approval and explicitly make that statement. The ishtiku. She was silent. And we interpret our silence as if she approved. La fuki hecha di amri lo. This is coming to exclude a case where they explicitly protested and said they don't want. So the bottom line in the sugya is that in all these cases of an independent agent, like an isha, like Ben Ubito Hagdolim, like Avdo, via Moso, or Ivrim, in all these cases, all we need is a tacit agreement, a mistama, and there should be no protest. There's no need for a statement and a proclamation, we want the air. So the Gemara asks the following question. I'm going to prove to you that if she was silent, that's not a valid Eruv. Ha, look at the language. The language of the Mishnah says, V'chulan she'eruvu v'eruv aleihem. V'chulan she'eruvu v'eruv aleihem rabban, yotzim v'shel rabban. Ustamo. This is a case of shtika. Uketani chutz min ha'isha d'lo nafke. Silence and tacit approval is not sufficient. Amar Rava kevin she'ervu ein lecha michui gadol mizeh. In all these cases, Ben Ubito, Avdo Shivchaso, and the Ishto, in all these cases, they, those individuals that we mentioned, set up their own Erev. So imagine what goes on here. An Erev was set up on their behalf, and they went ahead and set up their own Erev to a different direction. That itself is a protest. That constitutes a Mecha. You don't have to have a Mecha with the magic formula. As long as you indicate clearly that you don't want this Erev, that's enough. And that's called a mecha. So once again, the final line of this sugi, the Shashura, is that unless there was an explicit mecha, then the Erev Bichal, there's no need to have her make a declaration. And Rabosai, this leads us to the Mishnah on the bottom of Daf Pei Beis Amid Beis. Kama Hushi Ura. What constitutes Mazon Shtei Sudos for an Erev Tchum? And the Gemara answers, the Mishnah answers, Mazon Shtei Sudos Kol Echad V'Echad. Every individual will need his Mazon Shtei Sudos. It's not like the case of Erev Chatzeros that we discussed yesterday, where one Erev Chatzeros is going to be sufficient for all the Bnei Achatzer. In the case of Erev Tchumin, every single individual needs his own Erev. So Mazon Shtei Sudos is not enough for all of them. Now again, in Erev Chatzeros, we all share the same Chatzer, and therefore each Ben Chatzer generates an Isur Tiltel in that Chatzer on his friend. So in that case, we understand that you can set up this Erev Chatzeros on behalf of all of them. However, in the case of Erev Tchumen, There's no one else but himself. There's no other chaver that's shayach to enjoy this Erev Techumen. And therefore, mazon shtei sudos l'chol echad v'echad. Now the Mishnah brings a whole bunch of opinions, four I think in total, of how much food do you need for mazon shtei sudos. According to Rabbi Meir, mizono l'chol v'lo l'shabbos. Rabbi Meir assumes a person eats more on Shabbos, I call it the Neshama Yisera, that's my excuse, than he eats during the week. And therefore, we're going to take the smaller of the two meals, the Shabbos as opposed to the Chol meal. The smaller of the two meals is the Chol meal, what he eats during the week. And that shear is going to be the shear of Mazon Shtei Sudos. Divrei Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, L'Shabbos v'lo l'chol. How much of a meal does he eat on Shabbos? And that's the smaller of the two meals. Because he has to eat three meals on Shabbos, he's going to shorten or, you know, curtail the meals. So everybody agrees, as the Mishnah points out, Zev v'zev miskavnim l'hokel. They all want to get a smaller shear, not to make it more severe, more stringent to set up the Erev Techumen. And the only issue is, does a person eat more on Shabbos than he does during the week, or vice versa? And whichever is the smaller of the meals, that's the amount for Mazon Shtei Sudos. Those are the first two opinions. Now we have two other opinions. One of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, and the other of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Omer, Kikar b'funjon me'arba sa'on b'sela. It's the loaf of bread that you could buy with a very small, when I say small here, I mean in terms of its quality. It's worth on the market. A very humble coin, which is called a funjon. And how much could you buy? How much bread could you buy with a funjon if that's all you have in your pocket? When the loaf of bread is sold for a sela, if there were arba sa'in. Now, we're going to break this down into what's called kavim. Right, a kav is a classic measure of solid substance. Now, arba sa'in, a sa' is six kavim. Let me make sure I got that right. Once again. Yeah, I think I got it right. Sa' equals six kavim. Arbasain means 24 kavim. So you could buy with a sela 24 kavim. But all you have in your pocket is a finjon. Finjon is 1 over 48 of a sela. So if with a sela you could buy arba se'in, which means that you can buy 24 kavim with a sela, then with a finjon you could buy half a kav. Right? Because if you get 24 kavim for a sela, and all you have is a finjon, which is worth 1 over 48, right, of a sela, so then 1 over 48 times 24, do you have anybody have a calculator? If I'm not mistaken, 1 over 48 times 24 is equal to half.
These are
good. So we have the shear of Mazon Shei Sudas according to Rabbi Yochim and Broka, it's a half a kav. Now we have Rabbi Shimon Omer, Shtei Yodos Lekikar, Misholosh Lekav. So it's two-thirds of a kikar, when the size of the kikar is a shlish of a kav, one-third of a kav. And that's 2/9 of a kaf. So in other words, according to Rabbi Yochanan, Mazon Shtei Sudas is a half a kaf. According to Rabbi Shimon, Mazon Shtei Sudas is 2/9 of a kaf. It's less than half the shear of Rabbi Yochanan. And now the Braisa tells us that whatever your shear is of Mazon Shtei Sudas, that will give you a clue as to how to calculate other shiurim and other areas of halacha. For example, Beis HaMenuga. And the Torah tells me that a Beis HaMenuga is Tame. And what about a person who enters into the Beis HaMenuga? What's the status of the kelim, of the begadim that he's wearing on his body? Do they also contract Tumah? And the answer is, it depends how long he remains, he dallies, so to speak, dilly-dallies in the Beis HaMenuga. He has to be inside the Bnei Beis HaMenuga. The time in which it takes to eat half of Mazon Shtei Sudos. So let's say, for example, if Mazon Shtei Sudos, according to Rabbi Yochanan, is a half a kav, then a half a kav over two, meaning half a kav, is a quarter of a kav. If you had the ability, you would be able to buy 4 kavim with a cell. So we're talking about a quarter of a kav, and that's called chetzia, half of what we had before, which is according to Rabbi Yochanan, I'm just using Rabbi Yochanan, a half a kav, lebeis hamnuga. That's the shear zman that he has to remain inside the beis hamnuga in order for his begadim to contract tumah. The chatzi chetzia, and half of that, meaning half of the shear of a Beis HaMenuga, is lifsol es hagvia. If somebody eats ochel tameh, this was a sugi that we had in Shabbos, then he himself will pasel truma. His goof becomes, so to speak, tameh. I don't think it's really a tuma, but it becomes a psul for truma. So we now had it. We had it down for Beis HaMenuga to a quarter of a kav. Now we're going to take half of a quarter of a kav, which is 1/8 of a kav. So 1/8 of a kav is enough. If you eat 1/8 of a kav of, let's say, bread that was tameh, that passels you from eating true. I know you have to go, so I'm just going to try to quickly fit in a little bit more so that we can say we finished the daf. V'kama mazon shtei sudos, Amrav Yudam Arav, Tarte Rifta Ichar Yisa. Ichar Yisa is an Aramaic word that comes from an Ikar. An Ikar is a farmer, and they used to have farmer's bread, which means that when a farmer went out to the fields in the morning, his wife would pack him up with a, what is it called? A something lunch. Okay, I forgot the word anyway. What's the thing called, you know, with a box lunch or whatever it is. Anyway, so what bread was in the lunchbox that he took to work? That was the bread of the Ichar Yasa. So if you know what that bread was, if you lived at the time of the Talmud and you could identify, you know what the shear of Mazon Shtei Sudos. And Ravada Barav Omar, Tarte Rifta Nahar Papaisa. You need 2 loaves of bread that were baked in a place, normally baked in a place called Nahar Papa. That's where they bake these breads. And the Mefarshim say Lamaisa, we don't know what those breads look like. So that's not going to help us at all. Now, in the Machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, here we have a final Hachra. Omale Rabbi Yosef, le Rabbi Yosef Brei de Rava. Avuch keman svirule. So Rav Yosef is inquiring about Rava, and he's asking Rav Yosef, the son of Rava, what was your father's minhag? How much did he require for an Erev Tchumen? Rabbi Meir or Rabbi Yehuda? And Rav Yosef reports about his father, Rava ki Rabbi Meir Sfirulei, it means the smaller meal is the weekday meal. We eat a larger meal on Shabbos. And Rav Yosef says, Anon nami ki Rabbi Meir Sfirulei, we also have the same adopted custom. And the reason why is because we assume that a person eats more on Shabbos than he does during the week. Why do we assume so? To eat, Rabbi Yehuda, if you're going to tell me we eat more on a weekday, if you're going to tell me that we eat more on a weekday, is then I have the following kasha. Well, Amri Inshi, there's an idiomatic popular expression that Ravcha Libesima Shchiach, that the stomach opens up extra when you eat sweets. And on Shabbos, we eat very sweet food, and we have desserts and so forth and so on. That opens up the stomach and makes it more capable of eating a larger meal. I thought it was because of the Neshama Yisrael, but that's not the Gemara. Okay, then, Rabosai, here's where we're going to stop. I just want to add a footnote here. He says, "Lamaisa ain lanu birur ma'hem shiuri alachavim shal ayikarim or shal nar para." But he says that the Tosus of Rush, based on a Gemara back on Daf Pei Omid Beis, that establishes that Mazon Shei Sudas is equal to 18 grogros. That's the shiur of Shei Sudas. Now, although we didn't finish the daf, maybe we have a minute or two, we can add a little bit here. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Omer, etc. Tana, we learned that a brisa krovim divrayim liol shavim. Very odd statement in this brisa, at the face of it, that the shirim of Shtei Sudas of Rabbi Yochanan and of Rabbi Shimon are very similar. So the Gemara says, midami, they're not similar at all. Rabbi Yochanan is arba sudas lekava, right? We said that the shear of Mazon Shei Sudas is a half a kav, which means that there are four sudos for a kav. A full kav will get you twice the amount of Shtei Sudas, which is four sudos. And Rabbi Shimon is tesha sudas lekava. You can get as many as nine sudos out of a kav, so that you're talking about a ratio of almost two to one, even more than 2 to 1. Omar Rav Chizda says regarding the shear of Rabbi Yochanan Broka that if you're careful about reading it, he doesn't say that the shear, the kikar of Mazon Shtei Sudas, is chatzi kav. He says it's a kikar which would be bought from the baker with a funjon when arba son shalchitim are sold for a seller. But exactly what this, you know, what the value, or shall I say the price on chatzi kav chitin is, if you can buy with a funjon, a chatzi kav chitin, that's only the money that the chenvani paid for a chatzi kav of chitin. In other words, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka specifically mentions chitin, whereas Rabbi Shimon was talking about kikros. Chitin is obviously the raw material. And now the baker has this raw material, and he adds the flour and so forth and so on. Now he sells it on the market commercially. He has to make a profit. He's going to have to charge an extra 33 1/3% in order to make a profit, also cover all the work that he did and so forth and so on. So if that be the case, then perhaps we can, to some extent at least, close the gap between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon. So Gemara says, Vakati, nevertheless, I still have to insist that Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yochanan and Broka are not really krovim zelazeh. Dilamar, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's tisha, which means 9 sudas for a kav. Lamar shis, according to Rabbi Yochanan and Broka, even after I add the shlish, it still is sheish, su'udos lekav. So it's 9 sudas lekav or
six Sudas Lakav. That's a very significant difference between the two. Eli, you're going to have to say, says the Gemara, Ki idach de Rav Chisda. You have to apply the principle of a different statement of Rav Chisda Omar, who said that Semehen Mechza Lechanvani. It's not a third of a difference, but rather a half. Because again, as we said before, we want to have a profit margin plus paying for all the work that he did, so we're going to have to jack up the price by half. Gemara says, Vakati demar tesha umar timni. There still is quite a similar, a significant gap between Rav Yochanan and Rav Shimon. Rav Yochanan has it at 8 for a kav, meaning 8 sudas for a kav, whereas according to Rav Shimon, it's 9 sudas for a kav, so still is somewhat of a gap. So the answer is, Hainu dekamaru krovim divrem liyashov. That's why the Braisa was very careful. It didn't say they were equal, but they were somewhat similar. The Gemara asked Kasha the Rav Chisda, the Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda before said that we have to subtract a third, or we have to add a third, I should say. And now Rav Chisda is saying we add a half. Lo Kasha, ha dekayoev balabayis, tzive. In some cases, when somebody came in to order baked goods, he would put the logs on the table. He'd pay for the fuel. Other cases, he assumed that the baker would have to pay for the fuel. And that's the difference, the discrepancy between a third and a half. Obviously, by paying for the fuel, he reduces the price. Okay, then, here's where we're going to stop on the bottom of Pei Beis Amud Beis.